Namibia's business leader on Nova 103.5.
And now to get an ecologist's perspective of the talks at COP27, Angie Scholtz spoke to Dr. Peter Cunningham.
We are joined by Dr. Peter Cunningham, a local ecologist. Good evening, doctor.
Yes, hello, Angie. How are
you? Good, thank you. As an ecologist, what are your views on climate change and meetings such as COP27?
Well, okay, you must remember that climate change is also a natural occurrence. We live on a planet which is not static, it's changing all the time, and it will continue to change as well. So there's always been cyclic events of hot and cold periods, in other words, climate change. You think of the ice ages and so on. So it will happen again. Those are all natural phenomena. However, it seems that with us humans, it's a more recent impact that we have, and we're exacerbating the impact of climate change, and we're enhancing it and speeding it up. So everything we're doing on the planet seems to be affecting climate. So that's why it's now suddenly such a hot topic and such a big and important topic as well, because we're actively destroying our climate around us much quicker than it would have happened naturally. COP27, what's the value of these things? Well, you could argue that people just sit and talk there and nothing happens. You must remember, what is the alternative? The alternative is just too horrendous to even think about, because that means there's going to be no COP27. There's going to be no talking about climate change. Nobody's going to do anything about it. So nothing will happen. At the moment, at least, the people are taking cognizance of the fact that there is climate change, that there are problems out there, that there is something we can do. And yeah, you could still argue that not much has been done, and that is probably correct. But you must remember, if nothing is being done, then nothing will happen. So yeah, I support the fact that COPs are being held, because it shows that people are interested, shows that people are aware, shows that people are worried about it. And that's the fact. And hopefully things change after that.
Do you think they actually achieved change? I mean, the Paris Climate Accord agreed to limit global warming to 1.5 degrees Celsius by the end of the century. But a new report from the UN Climate Change shows that even with the combined pledges of 193 parties, we are still on track for around 2.5 degrees Celsius of warming.
Yeah, that's disconcerting. There's a Latin saying that goes, dum spero spero. And that means, as long as I live, I hope. And basically, that's what it's all about. We're not sure if things are going to change, if these people that are in charge or decision makers are going to adhere to this and live up to the agreements they're making and things they're saying. Probably not entirely, but there's going to be some changes at least. So the alternative is just too horrific to even contemplate. If you think that nothing's going to be done, we definitely do. So, it's probably not going to change as fast as we'd like to. We would like to see it not reaching 1.5 degrees Celsius climate change worldwide, but we don't know. If we don't change or stop now, it definitely will exceed that. And there's definitely going to be massive implications for humanity on this planet.
Then the CEO of the Environmental Investment Fund of Namibia recently warned that even if the world warms by 1.5 degrees, Namibia will warm by 2.2. Why is that we are likely to experience more severe warming than other effects of climate change?
Well, we're a desert country. We're stuck in the southwestern part of Africa, which has got a cold Benguela current, and that brings cold, you know, moisture and weather towards the western side of the country. They've got the Namib Desert. It's one of the oldest deserts in the world, so it's a really stable environment. So it's a dry country. Everybody's aware of that. You think of the Capri, which has got the highest rainfall, is only 700 millimeters per annum on average. And still that is classified as low rainfall. So we're in a dry area part of the world. So the expectations are that climate changes can exacerbate the climate. In other words, the dry areas are going to become more dry and the wet areas are going to become more wet. So you can just imagine a desert country already, which we are in, is going to become drier or possibly drier. Those are just theories. Those are just models, but that seems to be the way that it's going. So yeah, it seems that Namibia is going to become drier. And that's even more disconcerting, because we're all aware of how hot and dry and how difficult it is in Namibia. And if it's going to become worse and more frustrating, obviously that's going to have much more and more challenges. What's going to happen in Namibia? More evaporation, higher temperatures, fluctuating rainfall, more severe rainfall, long periods of droughts. All those things are going to affect Namibia. That's what the models show, and that's what the expectations are.
So what does the 2.2 degrees of warming or more mean for Namibia, Doctor?
Well, you must remember, it's not only for Namibia, because when you talk about 3.2 degrees Celsius, that's worldwide. So that's the warming of the planet. Now, you can imagine the polar regions, the Arctic and the South Pole, the ice melting with that type of temperature. And that's going to have massive repercussions, because you're talking about a massive amount of fresh water which is being pumped into the saline seas, it will change the salinity of the seas. If you change the salt content of the seas, you're going to start affecting habitats of all sorts of animals in the sea. So suddenly you're going to affect the biodiversity in the sea. That type of thing also then changes the currents. It also changes the winds. So suddenly everything starts changing with this amount of fresh water coming into the sea. So it's not only the sea levels rising and affecting, you know, your favorite swimming spot at Lindsay Bay or something, it's going to affect much, much more than that. You can just imagine if the water then does rise, the habitats that are going to be destroyed. In Namibia now, for example, if you think of the Kananga River mouth or all the unique animals living in the Kananga River mouth or Sandwich Harbor, all the paleoptic migrant birds that feed along our coast that come between the northern and southern hemispheres, fly in here to fatten up and go back again and breed there. All these habitats, estuaries, Sandwich Harbor, the Walvis Bay, all that's going to disappear. So you're going to affect globally the habitats of all these different species. Now, I'm not talking about us humans and how it's going to affect us. You know, just imagine the Walvis Bay disappears, for example. Ludicrous, all the harbors, how it affects the economy. But that's how it's going to affect Namibia. So not only directly affecting Namibia with less rainfall, more temperatures, higher evaporation, that type of thing, but also the changes in the salinity, the temperatures, sea temperatures, and eventually that affects everything. Winds start changing, wind patterns start changing, climate starts changing. We don't even know what the effects are going to be, actually. These are all just models and predictions. So it might be even much worse than we are predicting, and that's a catastrophe.
Sure. Some people have said that unless there's a profit to be made from saving the planet, we're doomed. As an ecologist, can you see a business case for saving the planet?
It's something that you should protect because we're living in this ecology, we're living in this environment, we're living in this habitat. Now, suddenly you put a monetary value to it, but it seems that's the way we humans function. If it pays, it stays. If it's got a value, we start looking after it. If it doesn't have a value, people just say, well, what's the point? It doesn't make any sense. Unfortunately, it's the way it seems that we humans function. So, yeah, you can on the one side say, no, you shouldn't put a monetary value to it. But on the other hand, probably that is going to be the only way that it will work. So if you start saying, well, and it's already happening, if you think about it, all these solar plants and wind farms and things going up, that's because of climate change. And there's a monetary value connected to that to get electricity through the sun or through the wind. So people see the business model, they see that there's money to be made, and then they start using it, doing it. And that is a good way to go. So you're not using your fossil fuels. And electric cars, for example, it changes some battery technology and so on. So those, all of the monetary value to it, and that's changed our environment and the way we see the world and affect the world. But yeah, probably that is the way to go. I personally would not like to see that way, but that is the way human beings function. So there's going to be a monetary value, and it's probably going to be a good one at the end if we can put more value to it.
Yeah. Just a final question. On a slightly more positive note, new analysis show that the global south, excluding China, needs over $2 trillion US dollars annually by 2030 if we are to stop global warming. Let's say the money materializes and Namibia gets some of it. What could we spend it on to best help fight climate change and global warming?
If the money does reach Namibia, the other point, well, we don't really impact that much on climate change ourselves. We don't have an industrialized economy that pumps in foul emissions into the air, that type of thing. So our impact as a developing country, a third world country, is low. It's the developed countries that have got the biggest impact. So what should one do with this money, and how can we change? Well, I would say because we're going to have severe fluctuations in temperatures and rainfall and that type of thing, I would say that we should, as a developed country, start using water more wisely. There's a lot of water wastage. So we could start saving water, have better pipelines, have better water saving mechanisms. Like the Omdel Dam, for example, it's not an open dam, it's a sand dam where the water goes into the aquifers. Start keeping water in aquifers, start recharging our aquifers. So have a total mind shift change, paradigm shift on how we use and protect and utilize our water resource. That should be imperative, and that is the biggest point I can think of that we should be following in a desert country. And then recycling our water, for example, like Bantikia with the sewage works, which recycles our toilet water and waste water and so on. I think every town should have a little sewage plant like that, which recycles water. So we're not just wasting this water. It's really sewage water, it's really waste water. Now we can convert it into drinking water. That's the way to go then as well. So I'd say pumping a lot of energy and money into developing these sewage plants around each town, not only Vinton. So So water, water, water. Those are the most important things, I would say. And then also changing farming practices. At the moment, we've got a European way of farming with cattle that use a lot of water. We could farm with more indigenous breeds, like, you know, Guinea, Tonga, that type of breed of cattle, which uses less water, is more efficient on the felt. The same with our sheep. At the moment, we're farming with Dorper sheep, things that come from Europe and South Africa. So farming with Damara sheep, indigenous breeds, which are less water dependent, use less water and utilize the felt better. So it's going to have to be a total change, and I think the money should be going into that type of thing.
Thank you so much, Dr. Cunningham.
No problem, Andy.
The Business Report.